This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
So thank you, everyone, for attending our very first Landmark Women for 2015, and to my knowledge, our first duo, which is exciting. So we've been looking forward to this for some time. Before we proceed, just a reminder, if you could turn your phones to silent, please, and that the session is being recorded by lovely Polly down here the front. So if you could wait for the microphone for questions. We're going to keep it a little bit more casual today. So just to introduce Julie Nichols and Rachel Evangelou, met by chance about 6 years ago, and apparently within minutes they knew they were on the same page. Today they are the forces behind Handmade Canberra and multi-award winning business that supports Australian handmade products and designers. Today they're here to talk to you about the ups and downs, the challenges and the love they have for all things handmade. So, as I said, question and answers, but I will pass over to Rachel and Julie. Please join me in welcoming them to the museum.
Thanks very much. Julie and I were saying it's so nice to, because clearly I like colour, so does Julie, it's so nice to see so much colour. Quite often we come along and we talk to things and everybody's wearing black and it's a little bit scary. So you're making me feel very comfortable. So thank you for that.
We thought when we got invited today, we were very excited and we had a bit of a think about what you might like to hear about our story. So we thought we'd tell you a little bit about ourselves, our background, how we got together and where we've gone since then. So myself, I've been creative for quite a while. In my younger days, before children, etc., I was in the Air Force. I was the Prime Minister's flight attendant. But on my days off, I would study millinery. So I'm actually a milliner by trade, and I've always loved making things. So that was my background in being creative. I was able to work and be creative at the same time. Rach?
Oh, so for me, I've always been creative as well. My mother was a seamstress and she had her own sewing labels that she taught me to sew from a very young age. But as a young girl, I was a gymnast and I was a very high-level gymnast. And basically I got into sewing because when it came to my Year 10 formal, I went shopping for formal dresses, there were just simply no clothing that would fit this woman, well, this girl with shoulders out here and a teeny tiny waist. So my mum and I sat down at the sewing machine and we made myself a formal dress. Shortly after that, I had quite a horrific injury and my gymnastics career was over. And then I had to start college where I didn't need to wear a school uniform, but it meant that I had to wear regular clothes that didn't involve Lycra. So I really did have to learn to make an entire wardrobe of clothing because truly, clothes didn't fit people like me. So anyway, I then hit the sewing bug and I continued sewing, always clothing for myself. I loved to make for formal wear. But then I was working in hospitality for many years and then I was a tax officer, which I know.
Don't hold that against her.
Don't hold it against me. I was a tax officer and then I had my two beautiful children, and when I was on maternity leave with my second child, I had already decided that I really desperately didn't want to go back to tax, but I didn't know what I could do. And I was happy to sew, and I was sewing clothing for both of my children. And I decided to just hold a market stall one day because my sewing was taking over the... Yeah, I know, right?
We do love cats.
We do.
We were saying early on, we are crazy cat people, so you'll have to put up with the cats.
Yep. So I started a little children's label and I went to my very first ever market, and then we met Julie on the very, very first market stall I ever had.
Yeah, and I guess that where we've come from sums up that pretty much everybody seems to be creative in some way, shape or form. It doesn't matter what you do or what you start out doing. The capability is there and usually the passion is there. We have a lot of closet crafters that do everything you could possibly imagine, but they love to craft in some way. And if they don't love to craft, they love to see it or do it or touch it or do something, which is fabulous and really inspiring for us. So yes, we did meet. I did get out of the Air Force eventually. It was a little bit hard to fly everywhere at the drop of a hat and not really know what was going on. So I also had a market stall. We are a defence family. My family's still a defence family, although we've been located here in Canberra for quite a long time and intend to stay here. But having a market stall and selling things that I made allowed me to be a little bit more flexible. But I found that moving around Australia, coming back to Canberra, that a lot of things hadn't changed. So that's when I decided that Canberra probably was in need of a marketplace or a market that could be just for people who did create. Because here in Canberra, you can learn to make anything. There is every single course known to man here in Canberra. It's fabulous. But then there's nowhere really. We have some great markets, don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is something, a market that was just completely dedicated to people who created their own product, that was marketed in a way so that you, when you came along as a customer, you knew what you were getting. You didn't know whether, you know, you knew that everything had been made. We have it that everything has to be made in Australia as well. Although you can purchase, beautiful linen tea towels. The best linen comes from Russia. So we allowed our designers to purchase the blanks from Russia, but then they must screen print their own product. So there is a little bit of a grey area, but the passion and the creation needs to be here in Australia. So that's what I decided we really needed to do. And on Rachel's first market, I sort of wandered up and went, oh, my God, guess what I'm going to do? Lovely to meet you, but guess what I'm going to do? We're going to create a market. You have to come along. She didn't have any choice. She had to come along. She said, yes, I'll come along. And from that, I think it took me about 8 months to work it out.
But, you know, the other thing, and you keep forgetting this, but you said to me on that very first day that we met that not only did you want to start a market, but because Julie had lived all around Australia and has seen just incredible talent, some of these, you know, what people are making in different parts of Australia, Julie was like, I really want to build a market that doesn't just support, you know, people that create and handmake their own goods, but I want to bring these people from all over Australia to Canberra. I want to bring these Melbourne designers and people from Mornington Peninsula and from all over the place. I want to bring them to Canberra. I want to bring the tourism in. And we and Canberrans being passionate and educated are going to love this. Mm. And so that was one of your other very, very early seeds, which you sometimes forget. But that's
a while ago.
That's gold. But it's part of what we do
part of where we started and where we decided we were going to go. Mm. So the first event was held at Albert Hall. And we had, I think, 36 designers. Yeah. It was the 22nd of November and it snowed.
Yep.
It was horrific. It was horrible. It was the most horrible weather. But it was a fantastic market.
Yep.
That hall was packed from the minute we opened. You could not fit another soul into that hall on that day. And from then we sort of went, yep, this Canberrans, they love handmade. Yep. They love seeing what people can craft. You have a great appreciation for what people can do.
How many people came through that day?
We had 2,000 or 3,000 yeah. people, roughly. At some stage, we just went, oh, my God, I can't count any more people. You know, it was amazing. We were overwhelmed. Albert Hall isn't huge, so it might not sound like a massive amount of people, but it was a lot through that hall over a couple of hours. So we went from there. We've had a few locations since then. We grew out of there quite quickly. We also had them tell us that they were renovating quite quickly, gave us a few weeks to move. So we found the Yarralumla Woolshed, which was not ideal but delightful. We spent a long time cleaning that place. Anybody who's been to a wedding or something since we moved there, you are welcome.
Yes,
you are welcome. Because we did scrub every inch of that place.
I have scars. The poop. 25-year-old poop. Have you ever seen that? Seen it? No, it's concrete.
Yeah.
25-year-old poop in those little slats.
Yep.
Concrete.
Yes. So it was sparkling by the time we held it. And it was fabulous. It was a great venue as well. We had two there, and once again it just got a little bit out of control. Yep. And we decided it was time to move on, and everybody followed us again to the next venue, which was at the Canberra Wine Company, which was lovely as well. And we stayed there for about a year. So we had about four markets there. And at this stage, we had grown that we were using the indoor part of the area and the outdoor part of the area as well, which proves, I know there are a lot of events in Canberra that are held outdoors, but it scares me.
Yeah.
You know, our weather is so unpredictable, so...
And at this point, Julie's market's now generating close to 150 storeholders, and she has achieved what she set out, and she has got people travelling from all over Australia. There are people flying from Brisbane. flying from Brisbane and travelling up from Adelaide and from Melbourne. At this point, the market at the Canberra Wine Company, in fact, even back at the Woolshed, is generating customers to 16,000, 17,000 people are coming to this market. So, and not only is it just Canberrans, but again, these are customers that are travelling from Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, you know, all over Australia to visit the market and to attend the market as a storeholder. So when Julie says that it gets scary having an outdoor event in Canberra where our weather is so inclement and you don't know if it's going to be snowing in November. And then we had a market in December where we'd had that torrential rain for the full week. And there's nothing that is going to make you feel... But it didn't rain on the day?
No, it didn't. We made it through, but at that point in time, we decided enough was enough. And we needed a lovely, completely indoor venue, which is where the lovely convention centre came in.
Cindy!
Lovely Cindy up there. Yes, she sort of took us under her wing and said, I will help you do this. So, and to her credit, she did. So we moved to the convention centre and we had quite a few successful years there and it was fabulous and the event has evolved. During that time, our stallholders, as you might know, we also have a shop front and where that came into is that our stallholders were starting to have a real opportunity to be able to make some very good money from their passion. And we have stallholders that work full-time and create items, and we have stallholders that are full-time in their creative business. So we have all levels. But we started running some business courses as well because, you know, all markets aren't created equal. Our stallholders can go to a market and they might see 400 or 500 customers over the space of 6 or 7 hours, and that's quite achievable. They can handle that well. But when they come to, we were finding when they came to one of our events, we were putting 10,000-15,000 people in front of them, and that's very daunting. And some of them all of a sudden started not doing very well. And we sort of thought about this and thought, well, what's going on? You know, we're putting the customers, we're surveying the customers, we're making sure that they're the right people that are appreciating these products. Why are our stallholders all of a sudden saying, you know, I'm not really doing as well as I did 12 months ago, you know, is it me? So we thought about it a bit and we started doing business courses for them. So we would do the occasional business course that would allow them to look at their business and look at the structure of how they're running the business and look at what they're, you know, having a market stall is not the same as, you know, selling it to David Jones or not the same as just having a website. There's a bit of a science to it, and if you're going to pay that much to be at a market stall and have that many people there, you should make the most of that opportunity. So from those business courses, one of the things that came back to us constantly was the market's fantastic, you know, you're really helping us grow our business, we want it more often. And we were like, well, we're not running it more often. How this works is that it should be quarterly, and if it runs more often, well, then we just don't think it will be the same. That's not going to fit our business model. So from that, we thought, well, how can we help the, you know, how can we solve that problem? And that's where we got the idea of the shop. So from that, we were like, all right, well, we'll open a shop front. We'll base it somewhere amongst a couple of million public servants so that they can shop at lunchtime or... If there's any bosses out there, they only come at lunchtime. They don't come any other time during the day.
They don't wag during the day.
Never come in any other time. But, yes, we'll open a shop front where the designers don't have to be at the shop. They can just send their product. We will sell it for them. We'll run it on the same business model where they can rent a space. So based on what they sell, they rent a space within the shop. It's merchandised beautifully and it's sold on their behalf. So that's where that came from.
And importantly, this is a space where they had control of their pricing of their product. One of the things, you know, that we identified through the business workshops, and I certainly was going through it myself, was that I was in a position where I wanted to get out into the retail world, but I wasn't in a position to wholesale my goods because everything I made was one of a kind and I didn't make things on mass produce, so I couldn't wholesale to other businesses. So giving my goods on consignment, where you hand over your goods to a business and you have your $40 dress or whatever, and the business then sells it for $95, you know, puts $95 on it, and the dress doesn't sell for $95, and then they go, we can't sell it, and they give it all back to you. So you're like, okay, I'm not making money there. And, you know, and there are all these complex business models out there, or all these business models out there that just simply were not fundamental or friendly to somebody who wanted to, who has an idea and wants to get it out there in the marketplace affordably, test it. Does it work? Is my price point good? Will it sell? Without you having to, you know, chop off your left arm and really have a whole lot of risk involved, which was why we set it up that way. So the designers, they rent their little space and it starts at $31.20 a week, so it's not too bad. They set their own price, which we do not mark up. So many customers come in and go, it's really reasonable in here. And that's because as consumers, we're so used to paying 150, 200, 300 on everything, but that's not how we roll. So that's how we came up with that.
Yes. Yeah. So the shop opened in 2010. Mm. The market started in 2008. So by 2010, we'd come the full circle of, well, how do we expand? How do we make this a little bit better? And as I said previously, the answer wasn't more markets. You know, let's not flood the area there. Let's do something based on the same principles, but answering the questions now of the consumer. We want to see this more, and the designer, who's also our customer. We have always have that those two lots of customers, but then the designer as well. How do we get them into the marketplace a little bit more? So that's basically what we do. We do it because we love it. We really enjoy it.
Mm. But, you know, when we went to set up this shop handmade, I just have to say this because this is my little, like, happy dance. You know, we all have one of those moments where we go, one of those. You know, like when you turn up to your high school reunion and you look awesome and that person that was mean to you doesn't look so awesome. So we had one of those moments when Julie and I, we've had a few of those, but this is the big one. when Julie and I went to, we had our idea, we want to open this shop. We spoke to so many real estate agents and nobody would rent us a space. And Lonsdale Street back then was not the Lonsdale Street of today. There were empty shop fronts all over the place and we went to all of them and nobody would give us a space. No one would rent us a space up along, you know, sort of, not that we wanted to be in the Canberra Centre, but there were parts of the Civic that we were looking at. Nobody would rent us a space. It won't work. It's too different for Canberra. That's too unusual. Canberra won't get it. That's over and over.
One real estate even said, I'm not even ringing the landlord.
Can't be, no.
I'm just not even ringing. And that was it. He turned.
You're wasting my time.
Yes.
So anywho, we then found the place that we're in. And for those of you who don't know we are, does everybody know where the Electric Shadows cinema was? Yeah? Okay. Hands up if you don't. Gold. Okay, so we're there. We're along the City Walk Boulevard down there. Now, it's the old Handy Electronic shop, and we turned up and we knew that it had been empty for 5 years. So we phoned and we called and we said, blah, blah, this is who we are. We're not taking no for an answer. This is what we want to do. And they said to us, you can have an 18-month lease. We think we're going to rip the building down, so we'll give you 18 months, you know. Yeah. We went gold. We'll take it. Well, within 18 months, we were clearly killing it. the shop was doing really well. It was bringing lots of people to the area. They decided not to tear the building down. And in fact, the shop next door had vacated. And so we said, can we have that shop front too? Can we knock the wall out and double in size? And they said, yes, you can.
Yeah.
And then they developed upstairs. And so now the building's not going to be demolished. But this is where the moment comes in. I had this suave gentleman come in a suit, and he walked through the doors and the shop was packed. And he looked at me and he said, "You're Rachel." I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "Oh, I'm so-and-so. You're not going to want to talk to me anyway, but I'm just going to tell you because I just should." And I said, "Okay, well, you know," sort of spit it out. And he said, "Right, well, so I'm from blah, blah, blah and blah, blah, blah. And in such and such area in Civic, this is one of the people that didn't want to talk to us." And the penny had dropped for him when he walked through the door. And he said, "You look like you're probably doing pretty okay here. You And I said, yeah, no, we're great. We're really happy here." And he said, "Oh, it's just that we're really struggling at our end of town. And I would really, like, can you come and open a shop?" And I was like, "Are you serious?" He said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he said, "We'll give you free rent. We'll do this, that and the other. We just need somebody to drive traffic to us. We'll do anything." And I said, "You know what? If I could clone myself, I'd consider it, but I absolutely cannot juggle one more ball." And that was the happy dance, because truly it was heartbreaking to have everybody say, "Not."
Yes, and then it really was. It really was. So, and, you know, the shop to then go, from us to go to a market, to a shop, double the size in the shop. And, I mean, that sounds like very rapid growth, and it is rapid growth, and that is something that all small businesses really need to keep an eye on. It can be a really big killer when a business just takes off and really goes gangbusters. So, you know, we're aware of our capabilities. We're aware of what we can and can't do. Mm. Every now and then we chew off a little bit more than we probably should. But, you know, it usually gets followed up with a bit of a, here's a reminder that you're only human. And we come back down to earth and you know.
I get out of hospital.
Yeah, something like that. So, you know. So that's sort of our story. Along the way, we've entered a few awards. We've thought, no, this is a very cool idea. We should, you know, put it out there and see how we go. So, you know, we've won a couple of tourism awards because we get some pretty cool tourists come to town, some big numbers. We've won some Telstra Business Awards, which we were very proud of because, you know, not only is it just gorgeous, pretty craft and people doing great things, but it was a really good business model as well, and it was doing well. And every time we go into one of those meetings, they go, "You do what?" We go, "Yeah, these are the figures." And they go, "What? That's great." Yeah. So, yeah, that's you know, makes us feel really good as well. Canberra Business Point Awards as well. So it's been lovely. Not only are we doing well in that you lovely people shop with us a lot, and then now we can support lots and lots of designers. We've probably got 500 to 600 designers on our books at any one time that we're helping out along the way, which is just fabulous. But every now and then it's also lovely to have somebody say, "Oh, you know, you girls are doing all right. Here's a little certificate that says we think it's a good idea."
Yeah.
This year we'll be... no awards taken. There's another one of our... we've reached our level. We don't need any of that this year. So this year's going to be concentrating on doing some of the more fun things that we really like. We're going to develop a very cool souvenir line for Canberra. And you may have seen the Canberra bus
mug. Effie. Good, thanks.
Yes. Rachel scared Effie a little bit that night.
I did.
I didn't think that was possible.
Yep.
But she did. Rachel busted out her good Greek Effie.
I drew an all right Effie accent. Mm.
And Effie nearly fell over.
I am pretty good at the Vibrations disco. She complimented me on my hairs in the bathroom.
Mm. So that was a good night.
Yep.
You may have seen the Canberra bus mug up there scroll past. And I wish I had shares in that thing. Mm. There is a designer, Trevor Dickinson, and he printed 16 of these bus mugs and bought them in and said, "What do you think?" And we went, "How many did you print?" He said, "6. And we went, "What about 600? He went, "No, 6. And so we put them out there, and I put it on Twitter and on our social media, and it went boom. And then one of the journalists picked it up and went, "Oh, everybody should get one of these mugs." So 270 orders later, we're going, "Oh, perhaps you could stop spreading that you get in Canberra best bus mugs. And then the other day, Hugh Rimmington goes, I need one of these bus mugs. I'm like, oh, dear Lord, please no. So we're now ordering another 270 bus mugs. This year I think what we're going to concentrate in on is, you know, get some cool Canberra souvenirs that aren't too daggy and just have a bit of fun. This will be our year of fun, you know, keeping the processes going but having a little bit of fun with it as well. So I'm really looking forward to that.
And there's the odd idea. There's a few.
Oh, yeah. There's always work involved. There's a gem. Don't get us wrong.
Yeah, it's a watch this space kind of thing.
Yes.
So
that's pretty much our story in a nutshell. I hope you found it all right. It's just our story. But I'd love to know if you've got any questions or if you need to know anything about the shop. Or
do you still have time to do your own
craft? Oh, that's a good question.
Let's say no. Oh,
yeah, look, no, not anywhere near as much as I would like, and it's simply because I'm a sewer. And I don't have a sewing room anymore. So in order for me to sew, I have to clear the kitchen table and get it all out. Although all the awards outfits that you've seen up there, I've made all of those. So I tend to, I'm a bit negged out about not entering any awards this year because I like to frock up. But it's my only time that I get to sew. I go, right, okay, I have to do this and I'm under pressure and it's going to happen. And so that's it. And I get a bit jealous from time to time, so I might, I don't know, do something like maybe knit in bed or
the occasional things
because we get jealous.
Yeah, and that's where our range of souvenirs, like we'll be creative that way.
And creative creating other ideas and things. But our millinery and sewing,
not so much
anymore. So sort of sad, but happy. But sad and happy.
We get to be creative. You know, we're always designing the artwork and, you know, how things will look and merchandising the shop, and that's very, very creative. Mm. So I guess maybe the answer was yes, but just in different forms.
Yep.
Yes, Cindy?
Sorry. For supporting the craftspeople that display at your markets and in your shop, but you also support charities. And I just wonder if you could speak a little bit about that commitment, how you make those decisions and what that support entails.
Thanks. Yes, thank you for that reminder. We do too. One of the things we always said, and I think one of the reasons what we do is so successful is that we've been on the other side of it. We've been customers, we've been stall holders. One of the things we always said we would never do is charge people entry to come into the market, because I just don't think that's cool at all. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, 20,000 people walk through the door, if they threw me 20 cents each, I'd be, you know, that'd be great. But that's not how we roll, and we always said we never would. So one of the ideas we did come up with early on would be, well, wouldn't it be lovely if we could support a charity in one way? Because our market is you need to make a handmade product, so you know, we can't just have a charity come along and do a raffle or something like that. So when we sort of were thinking about it, we thought, well, it would be lovely. Perhaps we could offer a charity the opportunity to stand at the door and offer information to people and then take a gold coin donation. And so we've been able to do that. And up until now, we've been supporting. We started off supporting motor neurone disease, which was very close to my heart. I've had a family member pass away from that, so we started there. And then we thought it was probably time to share the love a little bit. And so for the last couple of years, we've been doing Dragons Abreast and Bosom Buddies as well. And they have been a fabulous mix for our market. Being, you know, we attract females to the event, so it's been wonderful in that they've been able to really connect with a lot of people that could use their service as well and raise some money at the same time. So that's been amazing. This year we're going to change it up a little bit more, apart from having just grown out of the convention centre as well, and although that will be sad to leave there, we're moving on to Epic, which will just allow us to have a little bit more you know, a little bit of a bigger space and more parking, and we'll just be able to mix up the event a little bit and change it and stay creative and make things look a little bit better, so that's good. We're going to have Men's Link, supporting Men's Link at the next event. But we're going to, rather than have the same two charities on each day, we're going to have at one charity give them the 2 days, but change it each event. So we've got Men's Link first. The second one, I think we've had some lovely ladies who are raising money for cancer support as well. They're doing a big bike ride, and this will tie in with their event. And then we've booked in Dragons Abreast and Bosom Buddies as well then for the end of the year. So it's been lovely to be able to do that as well.
And the shop also has community spaces as well. So we have currently we have the Red Cross, and we have Painting with Parkinson's in the store. So they don't pay any rent or anything like that. They just have their space in the store, and we sell quite a lot of goods, and the proceeds go back to them. Just over Christmas, we had another one. We had a calendar for that young Canberra man who was run over by a taxi cab, and he still hasn't received any insurance payout or anything, and he has no income at the moment. So some of his work colleagues got together and put together a saucy calendar. And
that sold
and so,
quite well.
That sold quite well. So we did that through the... Through the shop as well. I know that this lovely lady here,
I don't know whether you've seen this Creative Capital book by Peter Dawson. It's Bureaucrats, Boffins and Businessmen. Now, there are 37 chapters about different organisations that have set up in Canberra, and of those, only two women are mentioned. Peter's planning to have another edition, and I would like to see you
on the cover. On the cover. Well, thank you, and please, yes,
I'd be interested in having a look.
Yeah. Thank you very much. There are so many creative women in Canberra.
It
blows my mind.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you for that. Muchly appreciated.
Were there any legal wrangles you had to go through to set up your business or government stuff? And have you thought of selling coffees and stuff, or don't you need to do that?
Oh, there's about 15 questions in there. Yeah. As for the coffees and cafes and things, that's more legal type. Your business has to be, you know, zoned for that particular thing. So even if we wanted to, we couldn't in the location that we're in. And no, I don't think we want to do that.
We talked about getting Lindsay and Edmunds in and having a little chocolate corner.
I'd like one to set up next door.
Yeah.
That would be great. A little chocolatier shop or something. That'd be awesome.
That'd be nice.
As for the legal stuff, you have no idea. It's, you know, we had these, let's open a shop. That'd be awesome. How hard can it be? There is a lot of red tape, a lot of insurance. You need to be insured for breathing. We quite often joke that you're not a real business until somebody threatens to sue you for looking like them or something.
Which happened before. We didn't even open the door.
And we had our first letter of, you're copying our idea. I'm like, could we open first before you say we're copying your
idea? This was a dude from America.
Somebody that wanted to sue us before we opened, who had an online craft supply shop. And because we were shop handmade, and he had, what did he have? I can't remember now, it was that long ago, but it was something very similar, handmade online or something like that. And very successful, very big, and he was just about to sell his business. So he had found a buyer, they'd done the contracts, blah, blah, blah. Part of his contract of selling his business was that he was the number one ranking
Google search
for shop handmade. And
here's another happy moment.
A couple of mums that didn't really know what they were doing at the time decided to open a shop and call it Shop Handmade, which may have bumped him off
number one ranking.
And so these people have gone, I'm not paying that much for your business anymore now because you're not number one. So he thought that wasn't very good. So in the end, it was simple as us adding Australia to the end of that registration at the time. But we had to pay some lawyers for that. We had to spend a couple of $1,000s for that and have some international phone calls and think, what, ridiculous stuff. There's behind every business, there's some crazy stories.
And especially for what we're doing with the shop, because essentially we made it up. The insurance forms, blah, blah, blah. Well, no, we don't fit in that box. We can't tick that box. We can't tick this. We can't tick that because
there are so many boxes that, that just don't apply to us in terms of software and how we operate. Software doesn't comply. You know, MYOB cannot understand what we do, you know. And so in terms of, you know, selling the goods and then having an accountant, we have an amazing accountant, thank God. And so we have an accountant, we have all these things and all these people that do all this stuff to make it all happen. So we sell the goods and we work out how much the goods, where the goods go, who we pay when and all that sort of stuff. Extremely complex. No system in the world can actually do what we do. So we did try to build one, and that was no fun. That was hard.
We actually had a lovely little run-in with the tax office, not this Christmas, but the Christmas before.
See, that's dead to me. I haven't thought about that.
Yes. And what you said just reminded me, and this was just before Christmas, so we're just coming into the crazy Christmas period.
13th of December it was.
Yes, and our accountant rings us and she said, oh, tax office want to audit you. Okay, that's fine. She said, they're, you know, they're going through everything with a fine-tooth comb. I don't think they understand what you're doing. Okay, what do we do? Nothing. They're going to ring you. Just explain how you do things. So I got this lovely gentleman on the phone, and he just kept saying, but you give the money back. Yes, we give the money back at the end of the month. We sell their goods. They pay for a space in the shop. Then we transfer the money to them. Why do you do that? Because that's what we do. I don't believe you. Like, we've got all this money going through your FPOS machine and it's going into your account. Where's it going? It's going back to the designers. It disappears every month. I know, it goes back to the designers.
I drive a Mitsubishi Magna.
Yeah. Take me through the process one more time. Right, this is what we do. You know, they pay for their rent. We say, yes, Mrs. Jones, thank you for your rent. We sold all your goods. Please give us more. Here's your money. But you give it all to them. Yes, we do. And we went over and over. And in the end, he went, oh, I'm going to tick this off. That's all right. Yeah, I'm happy that it's right. We ticked the wrong box, so it went to the next level. So we had a lady go, but you give it all. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, that was a little bit of fun, I must admit, because, you know, we had a lot of money coming into our account, but every month it was just gone. But you couldn't see what we'd spent it on because we didn't spend it. You know, we only have what we get from the rent from the designers. All the other money is kept in a completely different account that goes back to the designers.
Yep.
So, yeah, that was another great challenge.
Congratulations. I think you've achieved is absolutely wonderful, and to go into your shop is a pure delight, which I've done many, many times. My question relates to how is the shop staffed? Is it by designers themselves? How are they paid? How does all that work?
Oh, okay. So I'm there. I'm at the shop pretty much every day, except Wednesday's my admin day at home. So, you know, I'm just me. We do have an incredible team of girls that work for us. And I say girls not just because they're girls, but not because we don't have boys. We just didn't have any boys apply. None of us. But so it's not a girl-only zone, but it is a girl-only zone. So the so we have gorgeous Robin, and we have Romina, and
Jen.
And Jen. Now,
and Ella.
And Ella. So Ella is Julie's daughter. So Ella comes in and she helps out.
Ella thinks I'm going to give her the business one day, but she's wrong.
Yeah, that's funny. And Jen, Robin and Romy, they are all designers, but Jen isn't a designer in the shop. Like, she's a graphic designer and she's a creative person. Robin has been on staff with us for a bit over 2 years, and she started with us as a designer. And it was, you know, back in the day, it was just sort of Julie and I manning the shop, and then we were like, oh, okay, actually, we really need a little bit of help. And we just sort of put it out there, and I think Robin just came in one day and she just said, oh, do you need a hand? Like, do you, like, you know, I don't work. I could work here if you like. And I just went, oh, okay, let's do that. So Robin and Romy, or Romina, she's also a designer in the store, and she just gets what we do. They understand what we do, and I just have these really lucky, I'm lucky to have these amazing women that are creative and vivacious, and that's how it's
the staffing costs and all the running costs for the business come from the rent.
Oh, that's
so it's a very safe business model in that we know how many spaces we've got at the shop, we know how many people we can have located in the shop, and we know we know how much that is going to add up to every month. So we know, we actually know what we're going to make every month. So it's very safe business model that way, which is why we do things like, you know, create our own souvenir range, so we can make a little bit of money on the side.
Yeah.
So that's how all our costs and expenses and everything come from.
From the rent.
From the rent.
And we pay higher than the award rate, just saying.
Yeah.
So our girls are very well paid and looked after. They get a lot of love.
Yeah.
But and this was also, and just on that point, so here we are 5 years ago trying to open a business in Canberra and going along to these people going, we have a bank account full of money. We're not a new business that has taken a loan. We are a business that has money in the bank ready to open its doors. You know, well, that's how it was going to be. And that's how it was. When we found the place and somebody agreed it to us, to lease it to us, and we put it out there to the world or whatever, we opened on the first day, having never loaned, not even 1 cent from the bank. But all of that money, the designers had paid us money, like paid their rent. We haven't had to pay for the stock. It's their stock, so we didn't have to shell out $200,000 for stock. We didn't have to shell out for outfit. We didn't have to do any of that. It's all there. And nobody wants to rent us a space. But I don't know why.
We got there in the end.
Yeah.
Do the designers take a certain amount of their space permanently, or are you constantly changing?
Oh, good question. So the designers start in the shop on a 3-month commitment to begin with. And 3 months is a good time to really test your market. So you've got your first month, and, you know, regular customers come in, they want, you know, scope you out, see what's new. Second month, you know, you're really, really in the zone. Is your pricing structure good? And from that second month, we can generally start to tell where, you know, we're hearing from customers, we're providing feedback to the designer, and at that point we can either sort of increase, we'll talk to the designer and you can muck around. If it's too high, we can, you know, reduce it or whatever. And by the third month, should well and truly know whether this item is working within the store. And then after that, it's a month-by-month lease. So nobody's locked in for a long period of time. We do have some designers that have been in the store since the day we opened. In fact, we have quite a few that are in the store from the day we opened and they're still with us today. Some people are seasonal. Yeah, so it changes. Absolutely, absolutely. And unfortunately, sometimes I've had to say to people, look, you're not keeping up, you know, so, you know.
What was the original question? Sorry.
The original question was...
How long is their original commitment to the shop?
To the shop. So then it goes on a month-by-month lease. Because some people are seasonal as well. So people that are knitted goods, you know, there's no point in them selling those in summer. So they have a break and they come back.
I was going to ask if you feel that there's inspires other people to create, or if you've ever had an issue with people competing with each other and you have to choose a mug from a mug or a necklace from a necklace.
That's one of the hardest things about what we do, actually, is, you know, both for the shop and for the market. Now, you know, the market itself, for the market, Julie allocates approximately 150 spaces. Each market will receive over 500 applications. You know, and these are amazing applications. And the shop's the same. The shop is chock-a-block and jewellery is the most competitive. And you have people, you know, coming to you with these amazing goods, and sometimes you just simply don't have the space to offer. The other thing is, you know, people come in and they're creating things and they've put their heart and soul into it. They really believe in it. It's come from them and it's come from this place. But sometimes it's just not going to sell. Like sometimes we have to say no, and sometimes we have to do the... It's hard to say no to people that have really put their heart and soul into something, and that's difficult.
It's harder, though, to not broke, you know, if we go, oh, I just can't say no to that person, so I'll take their goods. And 3 months later, you haven't made them any money.
That's the worst bit. And so it's hard to say to someone.
Yeah. So, but we make sure we know our customer as well. Mm. It's not just what we like. It's not about us. It's about people who love to shop with us. And, you know, we have learnt over the time what is going to sell and what's not. Every now and then we get taken by surprise and you know, or somebody will go, I just want to give it a go. You know, I'm not holding you responsible for anything. I just have to give this a go, and we'll go, well, that's fine. You know, we've had this conversation. We don't think it will sell, but we're happy to give. You know, it's not that it's a bad product. We wouldn't take something that was a bad product.
We can't sell men's leather belts. I've had the most beautiful men's leather belts in the shop that you could ever hope to see. It's our biggest thing. People go, you don't have anything for men. Well, we try, but you don't buy stuff for men. And so, beautiful leather belts. They don't sell.
So there's always that tricky thing.
Yeah. I make these beautiful leather belts and I have to say, I'm sorry, darling, they're not going to sell. But they're beautiful. I know they're beautiful. But I've tried to sell men's leather belts and they don't sell. I can't sell mosaics in the shop. Bring me a beautiful mosaic pot plant or a mirror. Can't sell it. But it's beautiful. Yes, it's beautiful. Can't sell it. It won't sell. I'm really sorry, but it won't sell. It's hard.
Yeah. It's a shame. One last question.
Well, what do you mean? It's only just warming up.
We can go back to the Friends Lounge for more after this.
She likes to talk.
Just talk.
How much do you take home for yourself to use?
Oh, to use?
To buy?
Oh,
there's a rule. The girls have a rule for me at the shop. It must live on the floor for 1 week before I'm allowed to take it home because I'm terrible. I want one of everything. I have one in every colour. Thanks very much. Yeah. So, yeah, no, you don't want to know. And you and my husband?
Doesn't want to know.
Doesn't want to know. So. I have black market money that I hide. Like, you know how people have, like, that little envelope in case you need to run away from home? No, I just have that so I can shop.
I bet you're a good smuggler too.
I'm awesome.
Look, I was just interested in how items are priced because anything that's handmade, of course, it's very time-consuming. Mm. Mm-hmm. So do the designers have, like, a percentage for the materials they've used, their marketing? You can't cost your time, I don't think, can you?
Well,
you should.
You should.
And do they set the price or do you negotiate this with them?
No,
they set the price. We work very closely. Every now and then we'll get something into the shop and it'll be beautiful and we know the time that would have gone into it and they want $7 for it. We're like,
nope.
No, that's not going to happen. It's $27 because we know that it will sell for that and we know that. So every now and then we will say to somebody, oh, you're doing that wrong. There is a bit of a magic formula about how you price something and we have secret Facebook groups and newsletters and things that go out to our designers. And we help them with all of this as well on how they should price things. But we really encourage them to price it at what they're making money, what they need to get from it. And, you know, if it's a $5,000 floor stopper or something, then we probably won't take it in the shop or take it at the market because we know the market wouldn't produce it, wouldn't purchase it. Mm. So we work really hard. We make sure that by the time they get to the market or the shop, we know what they're selling, we know what they're selling it for, and then we make sure that the customers that are coming along are going to appreciate and be happy to buy that. So, yes, you can still buy earrings for $5. It doesn't mean that they're garbage or rubbish or anything like that. It just means that, you know, they have simply just purchased a beautiful fitting and a finding, put them together, and it's, you know, a nice, easy gift, and you can have one in every colour and take them home and not break the bank. But if you still want to buy a $3,000 diamond ring, you can do that as well. Mm-hmm. But then we've got to, it's up to us, it's our responsibility to make sure that we get the customers in that will purchase all of those things as well. But yes, we make sure customers, the designers, have got the information on how to price things. And we will quite often say, I think that's just we've had 17 people pick that up and love it, but then comment to us that perhaps it's more than they'd like to pay. So that's when we'll have a bit of a talk to them about it. And if they're like, well, no, that's what I have to charge, well, then so be it. We would never say, no, you need to lose money on that item to sell it. What would be the point?
Well, either way you look at it, it's a real fresh air for Canberra. So we congratulate both of you on your success.
Thank you.
Please join us back at the Friends Lounge and thank Rachel and Julie for a fascinating chat.
Thank you.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.